Welcome to Season 12 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. I am excited you're here. It is the end of the year, and you're still working on your development for the upcoming year. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. The fact that you're listening to this show this time of year is really important to me. And I know it's going to be important to your success in 2018. As I reflected back on this year, I thought a lot about Simone Weil's quote. She said, "Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity." I think she's dead on. Your attention to us, what we're doing, and to your development is so generous, and I don't take it lightly. I know that you have choices, and I know there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a ton of content out there to help you. So the fact that you tune in here every week means a great deal to me. Now, as we close out this year, moving into next year, I went back and I spent a lot of time going over all 52 shows that we had in 2017. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to review the best 9 lessons we learned from this year's show, because there were a ton of great ones. I mean, it was incredible. When I went back through, it was almost like an MBA to learn these lessons from the past year and from some amazing guests. So I'm going to review the top 9. These are not in any particular order. I'm not going to count them down like 9 being the worst, 1 being the best. I'm just going to count them out in what I believe to be the best lessons that we learned this year from 9. So let's jump right into it. The first lesson, and the one that I've made a daily habit without question, came from Mr. Bob Bodine. And if you didn't listen to the show with Bob is they call him the most powerful man in sports you've never heard of. And he taught me a lesson that he learned from someone that's called the Father's Blessing. And what the Father's Blessing is laying your hands on your kids' heads every single night and saying, "You are going to do great and mighty things." And what that does is it transfers belief to your kids every single day. So whether your kids are 3, 5, 7, 10, 15, it doesn't matter. I mean, my own dad could lay his hands on my head right now and say to me, "You are going to do great and mighty things." And I know with 100% certainty that I would gain something from that because I care what my dad thinks. So if you're a parent and you're not doing the Father's Blessing, or if you're a woman, the Mother's Blessing, I would highly suggest you start that practice with your kids. Tell them where it came from. It came from an old Jewish tradition where the father would lay his hands on his kid's head, and that's what he would say every single night. "I'm going to pour everything I have into you. You are going to do great and mighty things." Transferring belief is one of the great gifts a parent can give his or her children. So I encourage you to do that. It has been one of the best lessons I've ever learned, and not for me, but for my kids. Number 2 comes from a man that I just think is magnificent, John Gordon, the author of The Power of Positive Leadership, 17 other books. He said, "Great leaders believe in their people and hold them to high standards in order for them to be at their best." Brilliant. Great leaders believe in their people and hold them to high standards in order for them to be at their best. Think of that lesson in terms of the welder leader and how we define a standard. The standard is defining what good looks like. So what John is saying here is that great leaders believe so much in their people that they're willing to set really high bars so their people will choose to meet and exceed them. It sounds so simple, but people need that bar set really high. They need that. And it only can be set high is if the leader believes in their people and has a relationship with their people that they're able to do that. And where that standard, that bar that's being set is something that someone wants to achieve versus rebel against it. Number three comes from Howard Behar, the old president. He was a president at Starbucks for many, many years. And I learned so much from Howard. He's a real one of the great thinkers when it comes to servant leadership. He said, values are developed by what you reward, recognize, and talk about. I'm going to say it again. Values are developed by what you reward, what you recognize, and what you talk about. And I'll never forget what Howard said on the show. He said, greed can be a value. If all you talk about is money, earnings, revenue, guess what? The values of that organization are going to be money, revenue, earnings. And then the behaviors of the people are going to start reflecting that. They're going to cut corners. They're going to do things to increase revenue. Nothing wrong by itself with increasing revenue. Organizations need to be doing that. The question is, what are the values? What are the things that leaders reward, recognize, and talk about? That's the values of a business. If it's customer experience and customer service, is it treating other employees really well? Are you rewarding? Are you recognizing and talking about those things? Or are you only giving out awards to the people that are high performers, that are getting the job done on the financial side? It's a really good question. If you lead a team, what are you rewarding, recognizing, and talking about? Number four comes from another great author, Bob Berg, a book that made a big impact on my life called The Go-Giver. And Bob said, the single greatest people skill is an authentic interest in another person. How often do you meet somebody and only think about what's in your best interest? If you're anything like me in my walk, you've done that a lot. And then to hear or read those words, the single greatest people skill is an authentic interest in another person. It gives me something to strive for as a professional. How can I meet somebody else and think about what's in the best interest for them and not myself? I challenge you there because I know we all can improve in that area. And Bob is spot on. Number five comes from a man that I think is excellent, Mr. Brian Kite, part of the group called Focus 3. He said, leaders create the culture that drives behavior, which produces the results. I mean, culture is one of the most misunderstood words in organizational leadership, and we talk about it a lot, and Brian and his dad Tim talk about it a lot. But this is a simple concept here. Leaders create the culture. Yes, every single person in organization play a part in that culture. That is true. But it's a leader who sets it and creates it to start the kind of culture that they want to create. And that culture drives the behaviors of people every single day, which ultimately produces the results. It's simple, but very difficult to implement and execute every single day. So it's a simple idea from Brian that I think is excellent. It's excellent. Leaders create the culture that drive behavior, which produces the results. If you're a leader in your organization, you are responsible for setting and creating the culture. And that culture will drive the behaviors of your people, which will ultimately impact the results. Fall in love with the process. Fall in love with the process. If you do that, the results will come. because that's where all the behaviors are. That's where everything happens every single day, which ultimately, when you look back on the end of the year, you can say, wow, we accomplished a lot. Focus on the process. Number six comes from one of the best executive leaders I have ever come across in my entire life. Casey Crawford is the CEO of Movement Mortgage, an organization that I think it's one of a kind. It is excellent. And I sat down with Casey, and he said something that is so simple, but most organizations simply don't get it right. He said, build a company you truly want to work for, one that loves and serves people. How often do companies actually do this? How often do they actually build a company that they truly want to come to work for? Not often. Not often enough, that's for sure. Think about that for a second. All Casey and his team have tried to do is knowing that they're going to spend more time with the people that they work with than their families at home. That they want to create an environment that people want to come to the office for. I know a lot of companies. I've been inside of a lot of companies. We've worked with a lot of companies. Most are not run this way. And Casey's example and the things that he's doing at Movement Mortgage and the entire team is something to mimic. So the lesson is simple. Build a company that you want to go to work for. That you're going to get better physically, spiritually, mentally, professionally. Build that in your companies. Number seven comes from a man that I got to know later in the year, and it's one of the most powerful podcast episodes and conversations I've ever had in my entire life. Mr. Jimmy Collins was the third corporate employee at Chick-fil-A. He told some of the most amazing stories that I've ever heard, and one of them stood out to me. The lesson that I learned was simple. It says, make decisions to become the person you aspire to be. It's so simple. But we all kind of have that person that we look up to, that we would one day want to be. And Jimmy basically says, make the decisions every day to become that person. To become that person that you want to be. He told a story about a man that he looked up to a great deal. And eventually he got to be on the same board as that person. And when that man retired, he stood up and he mentioned to him that how much he was going to miss being on the board with him because he always looked up to him. And when that meeting was over, he walked away and another man that was in the room said, when I think of that person, I now think of you. And Jimmy really almost got choked up in the interview because he had become the person that he admired. And in many ways in life, what better thing could you do than eventually become the person that you admire? I had a good friend. He said, John, we should get Jimmy to come to Charlotte. Because that guy looks and sounds like Jesus. Now, it doesn't matter. This isn't necessarily a Christian discussion. I'm just saying, think about that. Are you becoming the person that you aspire to be? Are your actions and behaviors reflection of that? I work really hard to be that person that I aspire to be. And we're all at fault. We're all guilty. We all can do better, but it's a really simple way to think about your life and the decisions and the actions that you're choosing. Number eight comes from a man that I'm not sure anybody's had a bigger impact on me in my professional thinking, and that's Patrick Lencioni. And he came on and he said, a person who is humble, hungry, and smart can add value to a team in any environment. And I think Pat is dead on. Humble, someone that has great humility, that's selfless in nature, that thinks about other people. Someone that's hungry, that's driven, that's motivated, that's proactive, that wants to succeed, that wants to produce, that gets there early, that stays late, that wants to learn and grow and develop. Someone that's hungry. And then someone that's smart, someone that has it upstairs, someone that gets it, has a high EQ, IQ. A person that has those three things, humble, hungry, and smart, can add value to a team in any environment. It reminds me of a story that I actually heard from the head basketball coach from the Golden State Warriors. He basically said, if you have two knuckleheads in your locker room, it will not work. One, you can sometimes get away with in order to be a successful team because the other people around him or her can lift them up or overcome that one knucklehead. But once you have two, they'll mix and they'll match, and all of a sudden it will crush your culture. It will crush your team. So it has a lot to do with what Pat Lencioni is saying here. A person that is humble, hungry, and smart can add value to a team in any environment. If you have more than one knucklehead, you got issues. You can sometimes get by with one. But if you have someone that's humble, hungry, and smart, they're going to add value to any team, in any environment, in any organization. Number nine, and the last one, comes from David Marquet, a great author, great patriot to America. He said, great leaders want decisions to be made where the information is. And I tell this story all the time about Chick-fil-A when we're teaching in workshops. I took my two kids to Chick-fil-A. My wife was out of town. No better thing to go do than Chick-fil-A. And I walked in. It was packed. And I had these two kids weaving between my legs and playing and could barely keep them in line. And I handed her a gift certificate I ordered, and she said, sir, this gift card's expired. And she saw my kids running around and trying to wrangle them, and she didn't turn around and ask her manager. She said, sir, we're going to accept this gift card today because I see what's happening in front of me. And I thought about what David is saying here. Great leaders want decisions to be made where the information is. Great leaders don't want that 16-year-old, 17-year-old employee to turn around and ask their manager what to do in this one particular situation that was worth $15. They want them to see what's in front of them and make decisions that way because they're right where the information is. There's too much information today for a great leader to know everything. Instead, they want their people to feel empowered to make those decisions right where the information is. And that's exactly what happened at Chick-fil-A that day. And I think that's what's going to change companies moving forward. For people at all levels of an organization to feel empowered and to feel compelled to make decisions where the information is. To not turn around to their manager and ask for the feedback, ask for the response. To go ahead and make the decision and live with the outcomes of that decision. That's how more leaders and organizations get made, not by asking one person. So there you have it. They're the nine lessons, the nine best lessons that I learned in 2017 from the Follow My Lead podcast. I'll review them real quick. Number one, Bob Bodine, transfer belief to your kids every single day by telling them you are going to do great and mighty things. Number two, John Gordon, great leaders believe in their people and hold them to a high standard in order for them to be at their best. Number three, Howard Behar, values are developed by what you reward, recognize, and talk about. Number four, Bob Berg, the single greatest people skill is an authentic interest in another person. Number five, Brian Kite, leaders create the culture that drives the behavior which produces the results. Number six, Casey Crawford, CEO of Movement Mortgage, build a company that you truly want to work for, one that loves and serves people. Number seven, Mr. Jimmy Collins, former Chick-fil-A president, make decisions to become the person you aspire to be. Number eight, Pat Lencioni, a person who is humble, hungry, and smart can add value to a team in any environment. And number nine, David Marquet, great leaders want decisions to be made where the information is. I hope from the bottom of my heart that your 2018 is better than 2017. Good luck and have a great 2018. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It would mean a great deal to us if you would share this episode with your friends or your colleagues, anyone that you think could help develop and grow as a leader, which in my estimation is everyone. So until next time, be a good leader at home and at work.